bitch.
Mass Effect there. Hey, great restart, bud. Great job.
Wow, was that cold or what?
Second in front. Try to catch that group. Oh, why? I'm pushing like a hell.
It is undrivable. There's puddles, aquaplaning everywhere. Unbelievable.
Behind you, very close. Okay, Anna. It's fun. Okay, Timo, keep going. It's fun. It is done. Oh.
Sunshine, well done. Pole position, fastest lap, and the race win. Job done. Take that.
Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. I'm your host, Cole, and this week I'm joined by Lisa, our webmaster, and Paul, our IndyCar editor, and we're going to talk about this week's race at Mid-Ohio and discuss some of the news events from this week. How are you guys today?
Good.
Doing good.
Okay. First off, Jill DeFerrin announced Saturday that he will be either pulling out of ALMS or doing an ALMS team and an IndyCar team next year with two cars in each. I wanted to get your opinions on that and see what you had to say about Jill coming back. He's retiring as a driver, but he will be an owner in the IndyCar series next year. We'll start with Paul.
Well, I think that starts with whether or not the ALMS even exists next year, which right now it doesn't sound like there are a whole lot of high hopes for that. But I don't think anybody would be disappointed to see him back in the IndyCar series. He's a favorite of Honda. He's a favorite of Penske. He's a favorite of the media, the fans, of pretty much everyone that's been associated with him. And if the rumors are true of him asking $9 million a seat next year for two cars, they're going to have a pretty stout organization that they're going to be pretty competitive right from the start. If they have any sort of alliance with Penske, which you would have to assume they would, the Honda backing, whether they get the Formula Dream or and take that away from AGR, or Honda just pays a boatload of money for all the ALMS equipment, or somehow Honda money will be going there one way or the other. That's going to be a very competitive ride. I think it's a good move for the series. It's certainly another stout two-car team.
Yeah, I agree with what Paul said. It was interesting you mentioned that Penske connection, because they did ask during the broadcast if Will Power would be a contender for that ride if he does come over to IRL. And there was a little bit of, blowing off on that front. But I think it'll be a good thing for the series to get, another competitive team in. I think they mentioned it could possibly be a two-car team. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. I talked to Simone Pagenaud, who is DeFerrin's partner down in the garages this week, and he mentioned that he will be an IndyCar next year, whether or not it is with DeFerrin. He didn't know, but he said he's negotiating with several teams, so that's just another driver in the silly season musical chairs game. Also this week, speaking of more drivers, Frank Montagny is going to be driving the fifth AGR car at Sonoma. Well, there's been a lot of discussion on this around, and especially on our site, there's been a lot of commenting going on about it, that he might or might not be a pay driver or only there because of his last name or his recognition with AGR. So what'd you think about that, Paul?
Well, I think he certainly brings a lot of experience to the AGR team. He's got a lot of experience in the European formulas, drove Formula One for a handful of years. He's desperately needed at the AGR team right now. They bring somebody else with Tony Kanaan to do setup for that team, because right now they are just lost on all of their road courses. And if AGR can bring in another road course veteran that can really help them set up those cars, bring a bit of a replacement in for what they lost with Dario several years ago, it's a good move for that team. I don't know if it's an audition for him for next year or if this is a thank you and a payback for the work that he did for AGR's ALMS team a couple years ago. But either way, I think at any time you have someone with that much road racing experience, it's a very good fit for AGR right now. It's also good that the AFS guys from the Firestone Indy Lights series are moving up their operation at least temporarily to an Indy car. Gary Peterson at AFS has said that, you know, he would like to move his team up from the Indy Lights into the big car series. And I think it's a nice first step to keep them, you know, take the baby steps with AGR, with the proven road course driver, and I think it's a win-win for everyone.
Well, I could argue also that, and I have been, and there's a lot of discussion on this on the site right now, that maybe that is not fair because he doesn't have any IndyCar experience, and he doesn't have, you know, he didn't work his way up through the IndyCar ladder. He came from sports cars, and he gets to go right to one of the better seats in IndyCar. And I don't really think that's fair at all, because there's a lot of people like Alex Lloyd and Buddy Rice and Bruno Junqueira and Oriol Servia, and the list goes on, that deserve a ride and that have worked for years in IndyCar and Champ Car to get a ride. But they can't because of things like this, because people come in from Europe or from Brazil with sponsorships. And I don't know if he has one, but I'm assuming he does. And people that are worked hard for it over here and came up through our ladder just can't get a ride because of these people coming in.
Well, I think if Buddy Rice was really serious about getting a ride, he would be, you know, trying to get a ride. And as far as I've heard nothing from him in, you know, this entire year. I don't know if he even showed up at Indy this year looking for a ride. He just hasn't done anything to really promote himself to getting a ride. Bruno, yeah, he probably deserves a ride, but I think there was a connection and probably a handshake agreement between the AGR guys and Frank Montagny. Probably last year, like I said, when he was driving for their ALMS team, there was probably some deals there that were made previously that said, you know, drive with us, we'll get you an IndyCar ride at some point. I think that's really all that this is at this point. I don't think this is a long-term thing for the time being. It may turn into that in the future, but I don't see him running out the rest of the races this year. I don't have a problem with him coming and getting a ride. It's a one-off deal. It's been done before. It's not the first time it'll happen. It's not the last time. He's certainly proven himself in other ranks, and just because he doesn't come through the American ladder system doesn't mean he isn't a proven driver. He's shown very well in Europe the last several years. Like I said, he's had 3 or 4 years in Formula One, so the guy knows how to drive. He certainly knows how to drive.
And there was a lot of news about another supposed ride buyer this week, one Milka Juno, who is horrendously off the pace. She wouldn't have even qualified well in the lights race at her pace. She was 8 seconds off, and there's been lots of discussion on Twitter and the blogs and other sites that maybe she doesn't belong in this series, but when confronted, Brian Barnhart said that, you know, she's going to stick around and he's not going to stop her from getting in the way and endangering lives. So, I think Lisa would be a good person to ask about, you know, Milka, because we all know how much Lanica likes Milka.
I do like Milka. Like I said, I'm going to call her for the dark horse to win, and Infineon, you just wait and see. But anyway, I think I haven't mentioned it. I might have mentioned it in my blog post or somewhere, definitely on Twitter. But, yeah, it's just she really is a menace on these tracks. I think Brian Barnhart's comment was actually that she's only had one bad race, if I can quote him on that, from IndyStar, which actually gave me a good chuckle, because I'm almost wondering if he's watching the same series I'm watching, because I think it's pretty much every race we see her off pace and just always finishing dead last, always, you know, getting in people's ways. So it's a little bit of a shame. There's probably a lot of other drivers out there there are other drivers out there that are way more deserving of a ride than Milka at the time being. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out, but hopefully Indy takes a look at that and does something. I know a lot of it comes down to sponsorship and who brings money and whatnot, but it's a real shame. I think she's just completely out of her league and needs to, I would just retire if I were her.
Well, she did win the 24 Hours of Daytona a couple years ago, I know, but I think there is a certain level of talent that she has, but it's not enough. and it's not consistent enough to keep her around, and they need to get rid of her before she does hurt somebody, because she was, when I was standing in the S's at Mid-Ohio this week, she was chop-blocking people just to keep from going several laps down this weekend. She's a menace, and she gets in the way, and she's going to get somebody hurt eventually.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know where I read it, but even just reading that, you know, she had gotten radio to tell, you know, the leaders are coming, Wilson and Dixon were coming up fast on her, and, you know, she could have moved over a little bit sooner. I mean, those guys were flying by her, and yet, you know, they're kind of getting tangled up waiting for her to get out of their way. So I think we've seen that several times with her.
Yeah, I think it would have been more of an issue if the race would have been close, but Dixon was going to win that race regardless of what Milka did. It really didn't. That pick that she had, you know, going into turn four there was not something that really affected the outcome of the race. If it would have come three or four laps from the end of the race and she was still running that slow and, you know, she caused an issue for the leaders, then it would have been a bigger issue. But as it is, it's, you know, it just happened to be that, you know, Dixon was passing him anyway when they came upon her. Probably a big deal made about it. Otherwise, you know, we don't really hear that much about her this weekend. She's probably, you know, retires from the race 30 laps in for handling issues, and everyone goes about their way. So it's a big deal. And between that, you had that, and you also had Paul Tracy's blog this weekend that really called her out, probably rightly. But you know, between that, it got kicked around Twitter and the forums and the other media, and then the pass that just happened to occur right by her, I think it definitely got blown out of proportion, I think, this week.
Blown out of proportion that she's not as disastrously bad as people think she is?
Oh, no. She's still disastrously bad. It just got more attention this week than it would have normally because of those two issues.
Okay. I was going to have to confront you on that because... Sounded like you were helping Milk out there.
Oh, no. No, where it'll be scary again is when she gets back to Chicago, and I don't know if she's running at Chicago or not, but she got to a point last year where when Robbie Buell was coaching her, she was at least able to keep her foot down and let the leaders go by without being a menace. Now that Robbie isn't in her ear again all the time, now she's back to where she was, you know, before last year, where she sees the leader, she gets scared, or, you know, whatever, she loses the ability to maintain a consistent, fast line, and now she's driving slow and erratic, which is a dangerous situation on any oval, especially when, you know, they'll be doing 215 at Chicago this year. It's not a good time for someone to be slow and inconsistent.
And I was standing in the S's early on, and when she would come down through the last one, coming down the hill to the right-hander under the Honda bridge, all the other drivers would hit the gas coming through there and almost get to an upshift, and she would just coast the whole way through the S. She wouldn't get the gas or the brakes. She'd just ride. And I told you guys earlier that on the first lap, the whole pack came past, and then probably 8 or 10 seconds later, on halfway through the lap, there comes Milka putting by. So they need to do something to get her safer or out of the way or gone, in my opinion. Also this week, in some other news, there's been some discussion about Mike Conway's move on Danica. I haven't seen the contact. I saw it briefly as it happened live there, but I haven't seen it on TV or saw the replays yet, and I wanted to hear what you had to say about that. We'll start with Lisa.
Oh, I thought you'd start with Paul, since he is Danica's favorite number one fan. But yeah, I mean, from the TV view, I mean, it was obvious Conway just totally made the contact, knocked her out. It was a little bit of a shame, Paul, I will give you. She was running pretty good there at that point. So, you know, I think, you know, from what I saw on TV, it was without a doubt his fault. We all know he did the drive-through penalty. I guess that's really all to say about that. I mean, every time I've seen races, Conway's had some good runs where he'll be in the lead early on. But, you know, it seems that he always, you know, kind of spins out or checks out. So, I don't know, not much else to really say about that. I'll let Paul kind of run with his girl Danica and his thoughts on that.
Well, I think it was just another one of those typical, you know, bonsai moves that never has a chance. Not really totally dissimilar from Matos' move on her at St. Pete early in the year. Just trying to attempt a pass where there's no way they were going to get past and ends up taking Danica out. You know, surprisingly, she didn't go ballistic on him in any interviews that I heard. So, you know, that certainly would have spiced up the race a little bit and, you know, woken me up for a few minutes during the race. But it was just a, it was a boneheaded move on Conway's part, and I don't think anybody will deny that. And, you know, at least no one ended up on their lid, and, you know, it is what it is. No, neither one of them were going to win the race.
And, I was devastated by the fact that everyone was going off on Con Weezy or whatever his nickname is today, but the only one that didn't say anything was Danica, and that really hurt me. I don't like the bunnies in Rainbow Danica. I want the one where she's throwing stuff at people again. I like that Danica better.
Yeah, we needed her storming down the pit lane to shake things up on a Sunday, that's for sure.
What a great day that was. Here comes.
Yeah, if it's not her storming down the pit lane, then Schechter better be there throwing gloves at somebody.
Yeah.
This race was just terrible.
Yeah, we should have had him there. He wasn't racing. He could have just kind of stand on the side of the track, designated, you know, throw gloves at Milka every time she came by.
Yes. Well, what other news has happened this week? Briefly, I know you guys aren't really my F1 crew, but Michael Schumacher called off his comeback after all the media went nuts over the fact that the King was coming back, and so that's, we'll just touch on this briefly, but you know, that's kind of disappointing. I wanted to see him go out and destroy Schumacher and just come back with vengeance, but we're not going to get it now. So what else do you guys want to cover? Anything you want to touch on?
Lisa?
No, I think we got it all. It's been kind of a slow week news-wise, and we all know that Mid-Ohio was pretty much a bore, so I don't know how much we're really going to talk about that. So I think we're good.
That was...
Unless you have any stories you want to share from...
Well, it was very hot there. Yeah, it was... If you think it was boring on TV, try being there in the 95-degree heat with the 200% humidity and no seat. It was hot, and it was boring, and it was long, and I wouldn't say as much as I wanted to leave, but that was the worst Indy race I've ever been to, and I don't think I'll go back next year.
Well, it was boring for one reason, was because Scott Dixon was just absolutely untouchable this week. He maybe one of the best road course performances that IndyCar series has ever seen. To beat somebody by 29 seconds is just unheard of. Even if Wilson doesn't have the pit issue where they run him out of fuel for some unknown reason, Dixon still wins that race by a very wide margin going away. I just don't think that the league has ever seen a road course domination like that. He was almost keeping up with Wilson in the first stint of the race when he was saving fuel and went 3 laps longer. So you
wasn't
knew
he like was about to lap the whole field too at one point? I think he was coming close to it.
The whole field was very strung out. There was nobody close, or it was pretty atrocious. And you come off a great week like Kentucky, and everyone's expecting your great race, and then you get a lump like that. So, you know, I say it and say it and say it, but there are good road courses and there are bad road courses, and Mid-Ohio is not a good road course for IndyCar racing. So.
Well, the Mid-Ohio course itself was pretty good when CART was there, you know, up until 2003 or so. It's just these cars were not designed to be road course cars. And there's really no other way around it. They're just not designed to effectively run on road courses. You know, they came out in 2003, and by 2005 they were doing retrofits to make them road course worthy, but they just need to be built, you know, with road courses in mind. These were designed to be oval cars, and they perform very well on the ovals, and they show where they lack on the road courses.
They need to be more powerful, less aero, touchy, lower, lighter, more like a road racing car, and I think that'll help the ovals too.
I don't know that the ovals need a whole lot of help.
Well, coming off, you know, if you had gone back 2 weeks and said that, you would have been insane. But one good race at Kentucky doesn't mean we're set. So yeah, I think it's going to all come down to Chicago, and I hope we have a good race there because that'll help boost some interest, because I think the ovals are going to get better from here. And 2012, we'll get our new cars, and we desperately need them.
Well, I'll be glad to give you my first-hand report then at Chicago how it is.
I bet you will. I was going to go to Chicago, and that didn't work out, so I'm all disappointed now. Well, I think that just about wraps up all the review and the news, so we'll move on to the awards segment of the podcast. The first one is the Marty Roth Award for Excellence in Chicanery. Wonder who this could go to, guys. Any ideas?
I think this person's won 2 times now.
Twice
on a record.
In a row. Twice in a row. This week it has to go to Milka for displaying her awesome Marty Roth skills and ruining the race and getting in everyone's way and being slow and being undeserving of a ride in the IndyCar series. Any objections?
No, I think that one's unanimous.
Now we'll move on to the Eddie Cheever Lunacy Award. And to give that award away will be Paul.
Well, once again, the Danica is going to factor into my decision here, and it has to go to Mike Conway this week for his boneheaded move. Typically, that move would still never pass, and the problem is you usually have 3 or 4 of those in a race, and this time he was pretty much the only one, although I seem to recall that Graham Rahal may have thumped someone down in the keyhole, but I think Conway this week for the most desperate move that didn't work, he gets the Lunacy of the Week award.
Okay. And this week's Whiner of the Week award has to go to Paul Tracy. Even though we were all whining about Milka and how terrible she is, he took it to the next level with his PT style of arrogance and total ignorance by bashing her on his blog and on Twitter and various other places. And rightly so, Paul. Here's to you. You got the Whiner of the Week award this week. And the final award this week will be the Driver of the Week. And for that, we'll go over to Lisa.
All right, so the Driver of the Week, it's just kind of hands down to Scott Dixon. Sure, we saw some good runs from some guys like Ryan Hunter-Reay, but, I mean, Dixon just taking it with a 29-second lead, you just have to give it to him. He also became the winningest driver in Indy for his race win. So kudos to Scott Dixon for an excellent run at Mid-Ohio.
You did mention Ryan Hunter-Reay, who deserves a shout-out for a good showing in a Foyt car, which is a complete and utter lump, especially on road courses. So here's a shout-out to you, Ryan. Anything else we need to cover this week?
I think that covers it for this week. We've got another snoozer, I have a feeling, coming up at Sonoma here in a couple weeks before we finally get back to the Oval again. Thank goodness that'll be here soon.
Sonoma is the worst. It's terrible. It's even bad in NASCAR. I want to thank Lisa and Paul for joining me this week on the IndyCar segment of the podcast. We'll now move on to an interview with Dan Clark, so stick around for that. And now on the podcast, we're joined by a couple people here to help us interview. We have Andy from BritsOnPole.com and
Hello.
Former Champ Car driver and A1GP driver, Dan Clark. How are you guys?
Hi, guys.
Okay, we were just going to ask Dan a few questions about his career and where he wants to go and what the outlook is for next year and a couple years in the future. So I'll let Andy get the first question in since he is the guest this week.
Hi, Dan. We've obviously, as a site that covers British drivers, been sort of reporting on you for a couple of years now through Champ Car and through A1GP as well. And I guess the obvious question that people are going to want to know the answer to is really, what's next for Dan Clark? What are your plans? What are your hopes? Where do you think you are next?
That's a good question. I've since my Champ Car racing, I've remained out here in the U.S. Initially with kind of see how the unification went in the first year, really. You know, with all the lateness of it all, there wasn't much opportunity to be competitive in an outfit there. But yeah, my goals have still remained in the US, really. Of course, I worked my way up through the UK and did British Formula 3 in 2005. And then following that season, instead of, you know, doing another season of British F3 and going for the championship against Mike Conway, actually, we opted to come to America, my manager and I. So in short, my focus is still IndyCar, really. You know, there's a lot of exciting stuff that's been talked about right now, you know, with regards to not just the races and the schedule right now, but, you know, with the engines and the cars and what sure there could be for American racing. And, you know, a lot of people are quite critical right now of the current situation, but I think it seems to be, to me, laying for a very bright future in a few years with some new things. I'm sure they're going to do some new stuff, and it's going to be an exciting series again. And that's where I want to be.
If you can tell us, I don't know if you can, do you have anything even started as far as negotiations? Are you anywhere close on anything for next year?
Yeah, I mean, negotiations are always going, really. You know, I'm in the car right now because I'm on my way to have lunch with Keith Wiggins at H3M. So I'm just maintaining the relationships with people and keeping up a presence. I was at Mid-Ohio at the weekend, got to watch that race in the pit lane and meet a lot of people again and catch up. But I mean, as far as getting a deal goes, I mean, anyone kind of in motor racing right now is aware that, you know, with the economy, the sponsorship is so tough. And America is such a tough market for sports as well. You know, there's other sports out there that's got it really nailed down right now. But that's where I think IndyCar is going to change. It's going to improve, and it's got a lot of exciting options I think it can take, you know, and if everybody joins together, you know, IndyCar is the place to be, really. And then the sponsorship, you know, will follow that. And, you know, drivers like myself, like PT, like even Sebastian Bourdais, who's considering coming back, you know, that we're all going to have this opportunity to race again, really. And it's going to be in the, you know, in the Unified Series, the one open wheel series of America.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope to see you here, because we do need more just drivers with talent, not just money. And I did a post on that this week, and it got a lot of comments going. So, Andy, do you have another question for Dan?
I mean, the obvious one from my point of view is your focus is on IndyCar, is on the States, but you also represented Britain in A1GP last season. And we were wondering, will you be back next season? Will A1GP be back next season? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I came back to the UK a few weeks ago, and I was in the UK to have meetings with A1GP. Talked a lot with the guys there, and they're really excited, you know, about the prospect of me coming back and driving the GBR car again. You know, it was all last minute last year that I came in, but I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. You know, it was a huge thrill to fly the British flag, especially because I got to do Brands Hatch in front of all the home fans. So, you know, if A1GP comes together, which, you know, they've got a bunch of their own stuff first, then, you know, they'd very much like to have me back, and I would very much like to drive that car again.
Who is Team GBR these days? Because I know the management team that ran the team for the first few years went into administration. Has another management team formed to run it, or is it being run by the series? Who are you talking to?
I don't know, really, as far as next year goes. I think it's quite open. A lot of people are trying to get in that seat, you know, because it's locked out just for British drivers, and there's a lot of good British talent out there. As far as which way it goes, I have no idea, really, who's going to take over that team.
Okay.
And back to IndyCar, I wanted to get your opinion on, if you had the chance, what would you change about IndyCar, and what would you do to make it better, in your opinion?
Well, it's hard to say, really. I mean, because, you know, I've just grown up being a race car driver. You know, I haven't sat in the seat engineers or team owners or series owners, and, you know, I don't think I was old enough to even see the racing when it was really big with the, you know, different engine manufacturers and car manufacturers, but from what I was reading today, I mean, I really like reading race car engineering, and they had a bunch of articles today talking about, you know, what options and potential there is to have more engine manufacturers and maybe even a chassis manufacturer and really open up that, you know, the history of the Indy 500, and people can put something together themselves almost and go racing with it. And I really think that could add a lot more value to the Indy 500 and, you know, really capture that kind of, what I've kind of picked up from being out here is the kind of American-ness of people as opposed to European people. And they, everybody kind of loves the, you know, underdog and kind of the American dream of building something from nothing. And I think, you know, from what I saw today, you know, the Indy 500 could, and the IndyCar series, if it did something like that, I think it could do really well.
Okay. Andy, do you have another question?
Yeah, Dan, of all the drivers that we see in cover, you, more than most of them, I think, seem to be quite aware of yourself as a brand. You have the nickname Speedy Dan, you have the caps with your helmet design on that you either give out or sell. Is that something that a driver these days needs to develop? And it's not enough just to be good behind the wheel, but you also have to be able to market yourself as well? Or is that just something you've got a flair for and it's you do because it's fun?
It's a good question, actually, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I think, people at hip services and stuff, they all kind of brand themselves, and I think it's important to be recognized for who you are and qualities you have, really, and for people to see that, because, you know, there's a saturation of celebrities and sports stars out there, and it's hard to be recognized for yourself, you know, because it's hard to get TV time these days. But having said that, I think it's important to just be yourself, and as far as having a brand, my manager for the music business as well really wanted to use the kind of helmet design and make it, you know, and something that kind of stands out. It's bold, but it ultimately just comes back to who I am and my personality and the Speedy Dan and the whatever controversies people remember or don't remember. You know, that was me, just being me and, you know, trying my best and learning as I went along and just being honest, really. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, what would be the ultimate goal for you in racing? What would be just the ultimate satisfaction for your career?
I think it's a good question. I think just winning races, really. You know, nothing kind of gives me more fulfillment when I come away from a race weekend having won, or if I didn't win, finish second, you know, and just feel like job well done, really. A lot of satisfaction I got from Champ Car and 2006 and 2007 was just getting results with the team, and, you know, I really bonded with the guys I was with, and that's what really turned me on to Champ Car coming from Formula 3, is that suddenly the races were 2 hours long and you had pit stops and you had fuel strategies and you had yellow and kind of maximizing all of that, really, and just coming out with a good result with the guys, and then, you know, maybe going out and partying with them afterwards, really. And there's all that kind of team effort, and there's a lot of great engineers and minds in motor racing, really. And, kind of comes back to this opportunity that I think, you know, that IndyCar could have with opening up a bit of the engines and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of fun to be had in motor racing, and there's a lot of good people that you're surrounded by when you live that life and you're in the circle.
Mm-hmm. Andy, did you have another question for Dan?
I suppose following on from that, just wondered who your racing heroes were. I saw an interview where you talked about Ayrton Senna, for example. So who historically and who racing at the moment as well that you might find yourself actually running against, would you call, well, a hero, I suppose, an influence?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, throughout my younger years, it was always Ayrton Senna. That was really the only driver I ever really admired and looked up to when I was younger. And it was quite surreal when I had Bruno Senna as my teammate in 2005. That was a bit weird for a while. But he's an awesome guy. When I came to the US, in fact, it was quite scary being on the grid in 06 in Long Beach with PT and Jimmy Vassar around me. A lot of big names that I kind of grew up with as well. But I think nowadays I was mostly just disappointed not to see that Schumacher was going to race for the next Grand Prix. And I was really looking forward to that, and I think if he gets in the car again, it's going to be amazing.
It's probably his work as the Stig that's left him with no time to do it. The Nick injury is just
just a fake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think that's about all I had for you. Just in closing, what is your outlook? Do you have, like, I know I asked this already, but kind of, will you be anywhere next year for sure? Even if it's not IndyCar?
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's a good question, really. I think anywhere else besides IndyCar is not really what we want to do. I mean, having said that, though, I would like to do sports car racing as well. But really, just, you know, IndyCar is the focus right now. And, you know, I think as a driver, I've proven myself in Champ Car. And, you know, there's a lot of fans at Mid-Ohio as well that, you know, remember me. And everybody's kind of well-wishing me to get into IndyCar. And, you know, that's the place that I want to go to. So just the goal right now is try and raise that sponsorship and see what happens with the series and see how each team keeps growing and improving and which one would be the best to do deal with.
Well, that wraps it up for this week on the PlanetIRL.com podcast. I want to thank you for listening, and as always, be sure to check out PlanetIRL.com for all your auto racing news and opinion. And be sure to check out the podcast next week on Episode 6, where we will review the IndyCar race from Sonoma and preview Chicago and Valencia. So I hope to see you back next week.
Another crash and it's upside down. We've got a car upside down. It's Marco Andretti.
Marco, you okay?
There are actually 7 previous winners of the Monaco Grand Prix starting in tomorrow's race, and 4 of them are Michael Schumacher.
All right, pit this lap. Watch the speed limit. 3, 2, 1. Watch right here.
A lot of people here are really debating whether Ricardo Rossi is Formula One material.
Well, it's a fairly short debate, Murray.
I am so annoyed. I can't tell you how annoyed I am. I just can't believe that we had, well, the problems that we had in Brazil. And I come here and we have even more damn problems. So, you know, the car should not be where it is.